So, hello everybody, I'm Alan Fletcher, I'm president of the Aspen Music Festival and School. Welcome to the second of our High Notes meetings of this summer. We are used to enjoying these mostly in a Christ Episcopal Church in the West End, and now we are virtual, but I think it's super enjoyable anyway. I wanted to mention that we'll have two segments in today's program, which should be an hour-ish. The second will be the brilliant pianist Daniil Trifonov, who is with us, and he will be playing a recital which we will broadcast on Sunday, coming up at 3 p.m. Mountain Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific time, and I can't figure out where it'll be in Tajikistan, but it would be available live in Tajikistan. But we're going to start with a segment with our esteemed faculty colleague, Robert Lipset. And Robert has put together a string showcase, which will be broadcast this Wednesday at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. And you can do all the arithmetic to get your time zone, but 5 on Wednesday in Aspen. And this is going to be a presentation of 5, 6, 7 brilliant young people who would have been with us as students this summer, and who instead will be with us virtually, curated by our faculty member, Robert Lipset. So I'm delighted to welcome Bob, and I'm not going to do a long introduction. Bob is the Heifetz Professor of Violin at the Colburn School in Los Angeles, and just an absolutely brilliant career of teaching at many of the top institutions in the world coming up to this day, and thus I include Aspen as one of those top institutions. But Bob has brought us so many wonderful students in Aspen, and I'm just going to mention Simone Porter and Will Hagen, but I could go on and on about the list of fabulous students he's brought us. And what I thought I would do is start by just asking Bob to describe the concept of String Showcase as it happens every summer in Aspen, and where this concept came from in your own personal history.
So String Showcase is this goes back really hundreds of years to violin camp, string camp, which exists at Aspen as well, even though Aspen is a festival. But when you, Aspen is so many different things to so many different people. That's one of the miracles of Aspen. But if you dig down a few layers, you find, oh, there's a violin camp here at Aspen. And hundreds of years have gone by where every summer violinists and cellists and string players go off to some magnificently beautiful place in the summer where they are inspired and where they work their fingers to the bone. So that goes on in Aspen as well. And my teaching philosophy is based on kind of a, I think of it as a triangle. It's the amount of time the student spends by themselves practicing, it's the amount of time the student spends with their teacher learning, and it's the amount of time that the student spends on stage. Getting back to String Showcase, I felt very strongly that that was something that was needed, and it is run by the string faculty, as you know, and each week they decide who, if anyone, they have would be ready to play at the highest possible standard. So what we're given in String Showcase, it's not like a normal concert where you think, well, we need to have this time period. We want whatever your theme is. We don't really have a theme in String Showcase. String Showcase comes at us, and it's what the teachers have, what the students have ready. But the entire school en masse goes down to a very large room, and we all have lunch together there. So it's very bonding, and the students who performed are mentioned, and everybody applauds. And so it's a time of the week where, again, faculty and students are together and can speak informally. And it's just a weekly inspiration, I think.
The students just love each other's successes.
Well, that's something that's fostered at Colburn as it is at Aspen as well. So I appreciate you mentioning that and noticing that. But I do have, in fact, recently quite a bit of former students that have called, and they talk about these opportunities that they had in Forum and Showcase and at Aspen.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, you moved very quickly when all of this craziness that we're experiencing happened, and created an online music camp called Sounding Point. I wonder if you'd comment on how that experience has been and how your overall experience in trying to do teaching online has been working.
So when all of this happened, it was, as you know, quite suddenly. I started hearing rumors at Colburn that the school might close, and literally within a couple days it happened, and it was pretty shocking. And I have to admit, my skills with computer and with FaceTime and Zoom and all of those types of things was negligible. And I found myself in a real pickle that I needed to get up to speed and do it in a hurry. So fortunately, I had some great people, technicians at Colburn, that really helped me get up to speed. And suddenly I'm at home teaching online and just figuring that out as we went along. And it was a very, very steep learning curve for everyone, for the students and for myself. And one of the very difficult parts of it was the quality of sound was in many cases not acceptable. It was just dreadful and things like this. And then I had this epiphany that all these great artists in the world they're sitting at home. They're the same as us. They don't know what to do with themselves. So I started asking some of the artists, Robert McDuffie, Robert Chen, people that are even at Aspen in the summer, to come and talk to the students, and it worked rather well. It's going to get stale at some point. So I decided, I started to formulate an idea of having a camp, and I decided to do it. And with the help of Fabiola Kim, who is a longtime Aspenite, and we worked hard, and it's kind of astounding, but within 5 days or 6 days, we put the philosophy together and what we wanted to do. But it turns out there are ways, and if you know the insides, there are ways to do it.
On Wednesday of this week, as I say, at 5 p.m. Mountain Time, we'll have this Spring Showcase. I want to mention just two people, and then Bob, you can fill in more if you wish. Vladimir Fung, who's a brilliant cellist, who was with us a number of summers in Aspen as a student of Richard Aron. Vladimir won the gold medal in the Tchaikovsky competition in Moscow. Quite sensational thing, accomplishment. And he just has excelled in every single thing that he does in Aspen. And what he contributes to the String Showcase that we'll see on Wednesday is both a completely dazzling, very contemporary thing, and then a super romantic, lovely thing too, just showing his range. So I don't know if you want to comment on Vladimir.
Yes, I'd love to comment on him. As you say, he was at Aspen numerous years, and I, of course, Richard Aron, studying with Richard Aron, and he mentions Vladimir to me, and I started listening to this young man. And it's just so impressive. Rarely have I seen a string talent of that magnitude. In my opinion, Vladimir is going all the way. I think his talent is of such a level that he can't be stopped. And I think it just, it's already happening for him. So this is a great thing to have him.
Well, many, many thanks to Robert Lipset for being with us and for putting together the String Showcase we will have on Wednesday, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and for all that you're accomplishing. So thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great. So we now turn to Daniil Trifonov, the pianist, who will be our featured artist on Sunday coming up. That concert will be at 3 p.m. Mountain Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's a quite extraordinary program. And I thought, Daniil, if we could start by talking about the program. The primary thing on this is Bach's monumental Art of Fugue, which you are playing. And I thought maybe you would tell us a little about the project for you of learning this work and presenting it, and also the recording project that you've made.
Well, it's great to be talking to you. It's of course a great piece. I wasn't able to come to Aspen this year, but well, I'm happy to present Art of a Fugue of Bach. That has been something that I've worked on during the last year, and I started playing it in February, this February. That took a lot of time to learn it. The counterpoint is extremely intricate there. So I played it on my recital programs throughout the, until the pandemic started. I was supposed to play this particular program when the concert was canceled. And since then I haven't played on stage, so I'm happy to share it virtually.
Wonderful. But you have also have you completed a recording of it, or is that still in progress?
No, that's the recording is in plans, but it's something that hasn't happened yet.
Okay, because you would have presented this at Carnegie Hall, I think. Is that right?
I've played it throughout in several different venues in the country, mainly in the United States and more in Europe in the upcoming fall. I was going actually to record this June, but it's been postponed, of course.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering how many of our listening audience know the Art of Fugue, because it's relatively seldom played in concert, I would venture. Of course, one of Bach's last works, one of his very greatest works, sort of summation of all of his mastery, and yet an extraordinarily difficult piece. So one peculiar thing about the piece is that it's not specified for any particular instrument, and each of the lines of the counterpoint, as you mentioned, very intricate counterpoint, but each of the lines is written on a separate staff. So it doesn't even look in score like a piece for piano or for harpsichord or for organ or for string quartet or, you know.
Well, it was actually very likely intentional that it was left without notation, because even there was a first edition of Art of a Fugue, which was published a couple of years earlier while Bach was, I believe, still alive. And it actually does not have, he later added four more, he added, I believe, two more fugues and two more canons to the cycle. And it's also without notation in the earlier version as well. And I think the reason is also because Bach frequently reused some of his music throughout different pieces. For example, I remember there was a cantata that has exactly the same material as one of the concerti, just orchestrated differently. Like there is a trumpet playing in a cantata, And instead of trumpet, it's I think piano part in one of the concerti. So the thing is that with his music, it really sounds good on anything.
Yes. Well, now, as you say, Bach was very thrifty and imaginative, and he put things to many uses. The Art of Fugue as we have it is curiously incomplete. And I wondered if you would talk about what you do about the last fugue.
Well, there has been quite a lot of research done on the last fugue, and I basically looked at all of it and then decided to come up with my own ending. It's actually was not that difficult to do, because you basically have to comply with rules of fugue writing. And there are four voices. It means that each team has to pass through each voice once in the recapitulation. There are four teams. And so each time it's basically different combination in different voices of both teams. And also I read somewhere that it was intended to be all the teams to go in the mirrored version, which actually works surprisingly. It's if you take all the teams in a, it works really only in one way. There are not so many ways. It's more like a constructing a puzzle that comes together than actual composing, because there aren't so much things you can actually do, because if you don't do it correct way, then it simply doesn't work mathematically. So I kind of figured it out and just completed it.
Oh. Well, you of course are a composer, and we've had your piano concerto in Aspen already. I wonder, by the way, are you working on any new composition during this period?
Or? Not at the moment. I'm learning mostly some of a new program. This includes there is a Beethoven third concerto, and there is a Shimanovsky third piano sonata, which is extremely wonderful music, very rarely played. And also Brahms' first sonata, some music of Weber, Debussy.
Okay, wonderful. So, a standard question of any pianist doing a program like this has to do with the performance of Bach on the piano. And you're also doing a Bach-Busoni transcription of Bach, Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring. So do you have any thoughts about what happens to Bach when played on the piano? What is special? What is difficult?
Piano is actually quite a good instrument for Bach. In fact, it's commonly believed that Bach did not like early pianoforte, which the first models, yes, he did not. But that happened in 1710, and he lived another 30 years after that. So, and in those 30 years, tremendous progress has been made in the art of piano making. I've been to a museum of historical instruments and historical pianos, harpsichords and clavichords and etc. Outside of London, and they had a piano copy of which Bach actually owned in last 5 years of his life, and apparently helped distribute it in Germany as well. And it's the first piano that has actual working pedal. It had only one pedal, but it does what you would expect it to do on a normal, on a contemporary piano. Of course, not to that extent. It's much more gentle pedal. And the piano itself is very quiet, but it's already possesses a huge improvement over the first models of pianoforte, which Bach did not like.
Well, I often tell a story on this subject that when I was growing up, a great pianist who was playing the Bach repertoire was Rosalind Turek. And she was a peculiar person. I had some funny experiences with her. But I happened to be sitting with the composer Roger Sessions when he got a phone call from Rosalind Turek. And she said, "I have chosen the 50 living composers who I think are the most important, and I'm asking them all one question." So Mr. Sessions was almost completely deaf, but he was able to hear her question, which is that, as a composer, how do you think Bach would feel to have his music played on an instrument of whose capabilities he knew nothing? And by the way, she had Schnitka, Shedrin, Gubaidulina, Takemitsu, Hensa, crazy list of who she thought were the 50 leading composers at that moment. And Sessions said, "I am certain that if a performer understands Bach, the performer can play Bach on any instrument and in any way." And it turned out all 50 composers said some version of the exact same thing to her. Well,
yes, it's also actually because with some music can be very instrument specific and very dependent on the instrument. For example, a lot of Scriabin piano music is very difficult to imagine on anything other than piano. But with music of Bach, it's... you know, for example, we have a Mussorgsky pictures at an exhibition, which sounds both wonderful in piano version, in orchestral version, and there is also even a rock version from Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. So that's actually also sounds quite interesting.
I like Mussorgsky on piano myself. And actually, later in our season, Beksad Abdurayimov will be playing the Mussorgsky on piano, so I'll make a pitch for that. So what other projects are you working on now? I assume you're not performing in public, or are you able to go to Europe and perform in public now?
Well, in late August, early September, so that's when first concerts are planned to resume, but it's not yet clear logistically how easy it will be to make it happen. It's not known yet how easy it will be to actually get to Europe.
Uh-huh. Right. So I wonder about your Schnitka and Bach concerto program. Is that something that is becoming ready, that you're working on?
Actually, I just did it once. I did it once I played one concerto of Bach and one the D minor for strings and piano, and then the string and piano concerto of Schnitke, which is also extremely, extremely powerful work. One of my favorite concerti written in the 20th century. So yeah, I did it once in Germany, and then I'm there are plans to do it next spring, I believe in May or in June, actually in June in Spain. And this is a project that's probably I'll do more in the future.
Wonderful. So Joe, are there other comments, questions, anything?
Yeah, maybe more of a personal taste question for Daniil. Do you have any favorite interpretations of Art of Fugue from other pianists?
Actually, there are different interpretations. There have been recordings done on numerous instruments, and I remember one of my One that's I really liked. I'm just going to make sure I'm saying the name of ensemble correctly. So the members of Concertgebouw Orchestra and they recorded, I believe, in '80s on period instruments, and it's great recording because it's not only strings but also woodwinds, and some fugues are done with only strings, some fugues are done with only winds, and some are interplay between both sections, and it's very smartly done also, and I like how it is played as well.
Ah, because on with a single player on a single keyboard, it becomes truly virtuosic and difficult.
And it's also a difficult task to make them actually sound. It's a very long cycle, and it's all in the same key, and it's quite complex. For example, I initially thought of playing it all in one go, but then actually my teacher, Sergei Babayan, told me that maybe it's better to make a break and an intermission. And so I'm playing first 11 and then intermission, and then I'm playing the remaining ones. There is also a great recording for organ, on organ done by Glenn Gould. He didn't do a complete, he did only first 9.
And so when you play Bach on the piano, what is your idea about use of pedal? Because of course, pedal is one of those things that Bach would not have understood how that would work. And yet it's one of the capabilities of the instrument. So what's your idea?
Yeah, I mean, I almost don't use pedal in Art of Fugue. Only, I mean, but sometimes actually that's the only way to play in case of some fugues which have extremely big stretch of hands, and where without pedal some notes would simply disappear. But yes, again, like that piano which supposedly Bach had for last 5 years of his life. Had a pedal, and it's difficult to imagine that he would be at least not interested to experiment with it. So but yeah, in fugues itself, the pedal can be dangerous as the clarity of the material. The use of pedal has to be very, very careful if it's been used, as it can easily blur the material. Even without pedal, there needs to, for certain parts to be highlighted. Otherwise, if all voices are played equally, then it's very easy, at least on the piano, to achieve impression of not really understanding what is happening. So, and yeah, then pedal also can endanger. This clarity.
We do have, Alan, we do have one other question from Mark Sophia. And Alan, I believe you're muted. Have you found some benefit in the current isolation climate, having time to do things you wouldn't otherwise have had time to do, learn, enjoy, and so on?
I started doing more regularly Qigong, that is a series of Chinese exercises. That's what most of martial arts came from, like Tai Chi and Taekwondo. And I used to do it, but now I'm doing it quite regularly. So that's one of the pluses.
So I want to say thank you to Daniil Trifonov, who will be with us on Sunday coming up, 3 p.m. Mountain Time, with Bach's The Art of Fugue, and also the Busoni transcription from Bach's Cantata Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. And Daniil, we love seeing you in Aspen, and we look forward to seeing you again in Aspen, but we're so grateful that you will be with us in this way. So thank you.
Thank you.